This Is Money's podcast is brought to you in partnership with the Financial Services Compensation Scheme. Check your financial products at FSCS Protected at fscs.org.uk/thisismoney.
Welcome to This Is Money. I'm Georgie Frost, and alongside me and editor Simon Lamb, but today is assistant editor Lee Boyce. And the housing market has been thrown into turmoil as a result of coronavirus. A property market freeze, sales falling through, and lenders only offering cash to those with the biggest deposits. What next for buyers and sellers? And what about renters? Also today, the Chancellor finally throws a lifeline to the self-employed, though they have to wait until June to get it. But is it enough? And should those who work for themselves pay more in the future? Plus, have markets turned a corner? And don't forget your ISA. You can stay up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app. But first, the housing market, as with so much else right now, has been thrown into chaos as a result of the coronavirus pandemic and subsequent lockdown. Banks limiting their mortgage lending, removal firms shutting their doors, and many home buyers have been left in limbo. Those in the middle of the process have been telling This Is Money that they now don't know when they'll be able to complete on the purchase of their new home, if at all, with reports many sales are falling through. So, Simon, what are you hearing? What's going on?
As if buying a home wasn't stressful enough, now people have been told that they simply can't do it. So we've obviously got the position where we're in lockdown, so people can't go out. People are only allowed to go out to do essential things, essential shopping and so on, one form of exercise every day and so on. And included in your essential item shopping or in your exercise once a day was not shopping for a new home or walking around a property to have a look at it. So we're in the situation where basically people can't go look at houses. We know that. Estate agents have been told to shut their offices, that they're not essential businesses that should be able to remain open. So they're all working from home. And lots of estate agents had emailed people earlier this week saying we're working from home. What really threw a spanner into the works, though, was the government's advising people not to move home during the lockdown. So basically, people have been told unless it is absolutely essential that they move home, even if they're meant to be moving home. So say, for example, they've arranged that they're going to complete and they're due to move into their new home within the next 3 weeks, they should not do it. If they're meant to be moving out of their rental property, if they're meant to be moving into a new rental property, they should not do it. Then you've got all the people who are due to exchange contracts. I have a friend in this position. She's meant to be exchanging contracts in 2 weeks' time. She texted me and said, what should I do? Do I still exchange? I don't know what to do. And I said, well, look, the thing is, once you've exchanged, you're locked in. You've agreed to buy that property on that completion date. Mm-hmm. And if you don't complete on that date, then you could lose your deposit that you put down. You could lose 10% of the property's value. Now, obviously, normally the non-completion is due to people pulling out, mortgages falling through, some kind of financial problem or anything like that. Not the fact that they're not allowed to leave the house. Even if you could move into the property and the agent says, yes, we'll move you in, do the other people in the chain, are they able to move as well? And then we've had removal people cancelling people's jobs. So I've been hearing of people, we had a story this week, and I've been hearing of people who had a move planned and the removal firm has called up and said, sorry, we're cancelling it, we're not doing any moves. Other movers have said, well, if we've got moves booked in already, people are relying on us, we're still going to do it. So there was some confusion, there was some chaos. We had a couple of days of this. Government came out last night, gave some guidance and basically said, don't move, don't put new properties on the market, don't market them as normal, no viewings, no valuations, none of this stuff. And at the same time, we've also got mortgage lenders pulling vast swathes of their mortgage range for anyone who doesn't have, you know, the largest possible deposit. So I think it's safe to say that the housing market has been thrown into chaos and we've got a big freeze going on. And that's before we even get into any of the theoretical debates about what this could do to your favourite topic, house prices.
I can't wait. But before we get to that, firstly, Lee, hello. How's everything treating you?
Yeah, it's been marvellous. Very well, thanks.
Missed you last week.
Oh, thank you. Well, I've been back this week, cut my holiday short with everything going on. Been interesting working from home with a 15, 16-month-year-old baby. but yeah, I'm all good, thank you. All good.
Excellent stuff. Who I understand took her first, or is taking her first step. So that is some positive news. All right, Lee, well, let's talk about the less positive news for people wanting to buy homes.
Yeah, so the reason why the banks are saying that they've done this is simply due to the fact that they're swamped at the moment and their call centres and their staff, you know, largely working from home. So they're on a kind of skeleton staff basis. So you can understand that because there's a lot of businesses that are having to do that. And what they're trying to do is prioritise existing customers and making sure that, you know, people who are remortgaging, for example, are going to have the service that they expect from their bank. And I think it's just to try and stop the inquiries. But it's interesting, isn't it? Because we've had a couple of years of a mortgage price war. We've seen mortgage rates come absolutely down to rock bottom, all being encouraged to get, you know, mortgages out at such a low rate. And now all of a sudden it's the brakes have gone up and it's like, oh, nope, you can't get one of those mortgage rates because of what's going on at the moment. And I'll be honest with you, Georgia, I feel hugely sorry for a range of people that find themselves in this position. It's never easy moving home, buying a home, whether it's your first home, whether you're a home mover, whether you're selling to downsize, perhaps for retirement. You know, it's a stressful period as it is. And I feel for people. We had a case study earlier in the week of a couple who rent and they're buying their first home. And you've given in notice for your rental home, fully expecting to move into your new property at a set date. And no one could have foreseen that this was going to be a delay. I mean, when we bought a house a few years ago, we handed in notice on our flat because we were told in good faith that we'd exchange in a month's time. So we handed in the notice. And then a couple of days after that, we were told that there was a problem further up the chain. And that pushed an extra 3-4 months onto the process. And we were essentially homeless because we'd given in our notice and we had to go move back in with parents. And I think a lot of people are going to find themselves in those kind of positions in which they've handed a notice from a flat and they now have nowhere to go, essentially. Where do you go if you don't have parents, if you don't have relatives that you can go and stay with? And even if you do, the advice at the moment is to not go and stay with them. So
yeah, precisely.
There's so many elements to this and so many things going on. And I fundamentally, all I can say is there's a feel for people who are currently trying to sell a home, buy a home. What this does to house prices as well, as Simon alluded to there, you know, it's so difficult to forecast, isn't it?
It's going to be impossible, Simon, because we've absolutely no idea how long this is going to go on for. We're talking here about, you know, 3-week lockdown, maybe it's 12 weeks. Plausibly, the impact of this could go on and probably will go on for a heck of a lot longer. But what do you foresee?
It's difficult to tell because we had a report at the weekend from Jefferies, which is an analyst broker, but it's a stock market analyst. And it was saying that if you look at what the share price of property companies, house builders, etc. has done, that's pricing in a worst case scenario, 20% fall in house prices. We've had people talking about maybe a 5 to 10% short-term drop. Realistically, though, it's very difficult to tell because ultimately, if we just press the pause button and then everybody comes back in 3 or 6 months' time and things pick up quite quickly, we might not see big drops. It might be that all of the people or most of the people who've agreed to buy a property now just wait because they're not going to buy another property in the meantime, are they? They're not going to find anything else for sale.
Well, are they? Is anything out there? Is it just boomf? I mean, there must be some movement.
Look, right up until, so yours truly is in the process of trying to buy a new home at the moment, right? So I've been keeping a very close eye on Rightmove over recent months, right? We've sold our flat. We haven't found anywhere else. So in the moment, you know, we're just trying to find somewhere else. We're living with my mum. Up until about a week ago, there was still a reasonable flow of properties coming onto the market. It had slowed over the 2 weeks before that, but there's still a reasonable flow. Now it's hardly anything. And when you are getting new listings, I think it's just with the agents doing some kind of jiggery pokery that means it gets listed as a new property on Rightmove. And I wouldn't expect much to be coming onto the market for the next few months. Now, what's interesting, of course, is that we started the year with talk of the Boris bounce, didn't we? We had this post-election uplift. Now, some of that was a bit dubious. Some of it was agents talking up the market, or those with a vested interest talking up the market. Some of it was the extremely misleading use of statistics, which, as we commented, there were people using statistics from the month before the election to claim things that had happened after the election. Or the month of December, the election result was on the 13th of December. There weren't many people buying houses between the 13th of December and the 31st of December, certainly with deals agreed after the election results. So you couldn't really say that was the Boris bounce. But then we've had some more months of data since. And yeah, there has been an uplift. You saw lots of properties that have been sat on the market for ages, suddenly went under offer. Some more came on, whereas previously they would have come on and then they would have sat there for a while. Some were sold pretty quickly. You were back to, in some places, you were back to properties that were reasonably priced, selling in a day or two. Agents were at that time saying to people, get your home on the market. We've got a shortage of stuff. We've sold a load of this stuff that's been sitting on our books. Get your home on the market. Now, a lot of people decided that, yeah, actually, you know, things were maybe getting ironed out politically and they would like to get on with their lives and perhaps move home. But a lot of them decided that they would wait for the traditional spring home buying season. Round about now, just before Easter, the weather gets nicer, the sun comes out, the flowers are out in the garden. People think they're going to get better photographs. People think they're going to get a better price. There's a bit of a rush in the property market. Now, all of those people that have left putting their house up for sale until now have now discovered that they can't even leave the house. So what's going to happen to all those people? Are they in 3 months' time, if we're able to get back to some resemblance of normal in 3 months' time, are they in 3 months' time suddenly going to go, right, well, do you know what? Let's just stick our properties on the market anyway. Are all the people who've agreed deals now still going to be in those deals that are agreed? Are they still going to be interested in buying? I think we're going to see a wave of people pulling out of deals if they haven't invested much time and effort into it. So for example, if you've just got a sale agreed, you haven't even had the survey done yet, you haven't paid out any money for that, maybe you haven't even got a proper mortgage offer or anything yet, people might pull out and say, do you know what, wait a couple of months, houses aren't going to get any more expensive, they're probably going to get a bit cheaper. But if you've got people who found a house that they really like, they've done the survey, they've paid out the money for that, they've invested some time and effort, they've handed some money over to their solicitor, they've got a mortgage offer, etc. Maybe quite a few of those people are going to think, well, do you know what? Actually, I think I will go ahead with it. But what I would expect potentially is that when the lockdown finishes, when this stuff can continue on again, I think we might start to see a fair few people perhaps asking for a bit of money off on deals that they've already agreed. And to be honest, if you are a seller and someone asks you for that, you're not going to be very pleased, are you? If someone says, well, I agreed to buy it for X and now I want to buy it for Y. But if you're buying something else, or maybe it's a property you've held for a very long time and so it's gone up a lot in value, maybe you'd be better off if that person is fully invested in it and just says, oh, I just want some money off to reflect the fact that things have changed. Maybe you'd be better off taking that slightly lower price, because you could put it back on the market and you could find that you get even less for it, or that you can't sell it. So it's impossible to tell at the moment, as with a lot of things, but I would say that this is not going to do the property market any favours.
Is there going to be an issue though? I mean, you talk about 3 months, you know, a lot of people say, oh, I thought this was 3 weeks, you know, how long is it going to last for? How long is a piece of string? The economy will look very different in 3 months, 6 months, a year. Will lenders even want to lend on the same terms? Will they be comfortable? Will people even be able to buy?
Okay, well, this is what's interesting about the some of the big banks pulling their mortgage ranges. So we've got Barclays and Halifax pulling their mortgages, sold through brokers, not direct, is our understanding, anything above 60% loan to value. So basically, unless you've got a 40% deposit, unless you're the safest of buyers, they're not going to offer you a new mortgage. Now, the industry is saying that this is because, A, they are being seriously disrupted by staff shortages, having to get people to work from home, people are off sick, people are self-isolating and so on. So they're unable to deal with the new business. Mm-hmm. B, they can't get the valuers around there to do any valuations. So they're only willing to lend on what are the safest of properties, on the basis that if someone's putting down at least 40% of a property's value, you can do a desktop valuation. You don't need to send someone around there, because all the bank cares about is whether it gets enough money back to cover the mortgage. So that's allowed, that you're pricing in a 40% drop in the price, even allowing for a sale or auction or whatever if you have to repossess. But also that they're being absolutely swamped by people asking for mortgage holidays at the moment. There's this 3-month mortgage holiday that has been proposed. Maybe that's where I'm getting the 3 months from rather than the 3 weeks. Or maybe I just didn't want to say 12 months.
No, everybody's saying in 3 months. 3 months is the magic figure for everything. And yet,
isn't it? Yeah.
My only instinct is that we told 3 weeks to stay in, and then in 3 weeks' time, a bit like a kid. Yeah, it's just 3 weeks. It's just three, and then 3 weeks comes around. Just another 3 more weeks. Just another 3 more weeks until we get to 3 months. Is that what's going to happen?
Potentially, my friend
Don't
in Italy
answer that,
is hearing,
I'm not,
my friend
I'm not emotionally
is
ready for the answer.
Third week, and they're meant to be. Their lockdown's meant to be lifted on the 3rd of April, but they're thinking that it's going to continue on for longer. So it could be. I mean, there's very much
just extended theirs.
Yeah, there's some very asymmetric outcomes that are potentially going to happen here. People are being, the lenders are being swamped with these mortgage holiday requests, and they cannot deal with the number of requests they're getting for that. So they can't deal with writing new business, and they're just having to prioritize. And the thing they're prioritizing is their existing customers and these mortgage holidays. But I would say that there is definitely an element going on here of lenders looking at this, like everybody's looking at this scenario going, we just don't know what is going to happen here. Our forecasting models, we might as well, you know, lob them
throw
in
out.
The bin.
Yeah,
are no good
exactly.
to us here. So we can't predict what's going to happen with prices. So we're going to be quite cautious on lending. And the only time I remember mortgages being pulled on this scale was post-financial crisis. That was because the banks weren't happy to lend to people and they didn't have the money. Now, the big difference is now people in the mortgage industry are saying nothing has changed on that, you know, front. The banks, who were engaged in a fierce mortgage price war right up until the point where coronavirus broke, are still sitting on the ability to lend and want to lend more money and want to make more money. So it could be that, you know, they come back and they still come back competing for that mortgage business, but they're not happy to do it until things are more settled.
Lee, what's your views about my favourite subject?
Well, actually, firstly, George, I just wanted to touch back on the mortgage holidays. We actually spoke to one mortgage lender who is saying, obviously, that they're having a huge spike in calls and that some people are struggling to get through. They're actually saying that some of the calls are from people who just don't need a mortgage payment. And they're saying,
a bit like panic buying.
A little bit, yeah, and it shouldn't just be a free-for-all. And they said at the end of the day, all they're doing is clogging up the phone lines for people that actually genuinely do need a mortgage holiday. So,
because if
you
don't need it, you will get rejected, won't you? I mean, it is
Exactly, yeah. And you know, it's one of those sort of measures that banks tend to do it anyway. You can usually ask for this kind of mortgage holiday if you've been made unemployed. I remember Barclays did it for my mum in the financial crisis. She lost her job and we had a 3-month holiday to make sure that we could make ends meet. So it's not like it's a new thing, but of course, you're right, it's like panic buying mortgage holidays.
But actually, I should point out, you don't actually have to show that coronavirus has negatively impacted, like you've lost a job or something. You just have to think that you might, for the next 3 months or however long, struggle to pay your mortgage. I mean, you will eventually have to pay this money back.
Yeah, and I think that's a very good point to make there, Georgie. I think that there might be a little bit of a misconception going on amongst people. They're going to get off 3 months of their mortgage.
Yeah, no, sorry.
To the end, you still have to pay the money. In fact, due to the interest, you will pay back slightly more money, but, you know, it's only a very minimal amount over 3 months.
If you really need it, take it, contact your lender, obviously. But if you don't clog up the systems for everyone else and think about what your repayments are going to be. I think crunching at the numbers, the repayments will not be that much higher, but that's something to bear in mind. You will have to pay this money back.
Exactly that, Georgie. And, you know, that's what things people need to consider and be reasonable and understand that actually some people really will need this, and not to be selfish, basically. I mean, this is what a new kind of coronavirus communities that we're living in, and people need to just make sure that they're not being silly, you know, and doing the right thing. In terms of house prices, now that is an interesting topic I think. And people were getting quite excited, actually, on our Twitter earlier in the week when there was a figure bounded around that house prices might drop 20%. Now, we've had all of this before,
haven't we? You got that with Brexit, didn't we?
It takes you back to Brexit.
Then. Yeah.
When it was, I think, 18 or 28% in a sort of worst case scenario.
The Brexit prediction was hilariously specific.
Yeah, it was 18%,
I'm
sure
of it. Really specific number, yeah.
Yes. So this was a kind of looser number, should I say. And, you know, people do get a little bit excited about that, especially if you're in a position in which you are kind of saving towards the first property, for example. The prediction, 20%, it comes from stock market analyst Jefferies, and it would knock off £28,000 off the average home, which is pretty sizable, and it could go back to those, I'm going to say that the words that people don't like to hear, negative equity, and I think that's what people will be panicking about in this kind of scenario. You know, we've never had a housing market that's completely ground to a halt like this. You know, that's what I'm going to keep saying, no one's ever hit the pause button like this, so we don't quite know what the impact's going to be. I would suggest that there is more of a chance of house prices falling a little bit than there was in the aftermath of Brexit. Personally, I think that we will see house prices fall a little bit. But who knows? Maybe we just press the pause button and in a couple of months' time, we just see it as all like a, cool, that was a mad couple of months and everything just goes on as business as usual. But, you know, people are going to be losing their jobs. That's going to make, you know, getting a mortgage, especially if you're in the process of getting a mortgage, interesting. I mean, I'm not sure how that's going to work. So let's say you've got a mortgage lined up and you're set to buy a home. Well, what about if you've lost your job in the interim?
Those industries will still be there when you go back. You know, they may have government support for the next 3 months or looking slightly longer term. Not to be all gloom and doom, and I do hope you're absolutely right there, Lee, and everything does go back to how it was when we've got another sensational summer.
Of no sport.
But on the plus side, maybe we could make the police chasing people out for a walk with drones one of the new sports.
That'd be a good TV show.
Apparently they're going around with talking drones now, ordering people inside.
This, I think, is absolutely outrageous and a great example of how to abuse power that's been handed to you. I mean, the one of Derbyshire police was an absolutely ridiculous one, wasn't it? We've sort of gone slightly off topic here. But, you know, if you are told that you can go and do your one exercise a day and you are lucky enough to live in the Peak District, then you can. I cannot see why you should not be able to drive to a very isolated place and do a little bit of exercise there. But not according to Derbyshire police, who have decided to put the drones out and then shame people on social media as if the police don't have enough to do right now.
Shamed people who in all of those videos were actually with only one other person and did appear to be following the rules to socially distance themselves.
Parking socially distantly as well. That's ridiculous.
Do you know what I've noticed, and I don't know if you guys have noticed, I know we're going a little bit off topic here, but I've been going for like my one daily exercise, usually about 4:30, 5 o'clock, and literally everyone is out and about with their kids on bikes, like almost like learning to ride a bike for the first time. It's like people have almost woken up in the dawn in which, oh wow, you know, we need to get out and about and do things.
It's been Brits,
massively weird. And then people are sort of talking to each other across the road, and it's very strange. I can't quite...
I could get very used to having far less cars on the road and far less planes in the sky, I must say that.
That's another thing. I mean, we're talking off topic, but actually this is what a lot of people listening will be thinking about at the moment, and some of them may be on their own, so hello to you, is how life is going to change. I mean, we talk about businesses, I was speaking earlier there about what sort of businesses are going to be around. How much are we going to realise, you know, actually, do we need all the stuff that we had? Do we need to perhaps use the car as much? Do we need to go to, you know, the pub or restaurants or whatever? How much of our behaviour is going to impact on business going forward?
I think it will be like after people do things like Dry January, where once they start drinking again,
everybody goes,
they tend to drink a little bit less and they drink a little bit slower for about 2 weeks to a month, 6 weeks, and then they're just back to normal and they've forgotten it.
By the summer, we'll all have our tops off over the park, you know, cans of beers, eating out, eating kebabs.
Touching everybody, slapping backs. And, you
high
know.
Fives, yeah. Sweaty nightclubs, don't worry, it will make a comeback.
Anybody listening to this podcast, guess which one of us is from Essex?
No fake tan, though.
All right, well, we're going to move on now, because there is another big issue this week, and that relates to the self-employed. Now, it was a long time coming for the 5 million people in the UK that work for themselves, but finally, we got some measures aimed at helping those who've been adversely affected by coronavirus. Now, similar to the support offered to PAYE employees, but the self-employed will get a taxable grant of 80% of their average monthly profit over the previous 3 years if they have them, shorter if they don't. And that's capped at £2,500 a month. Now, it comes with caveats. Many will miss out. It won't be paid for weeks. And the future looks a little bit more expensive, probably a lot more expensive for the self-employed as a result, as we got more than musings, I think, from the Chancellor suggesting that it's about time that self-employed people were a bit more in line with the tax and national insurance contributions of employed people. So I suppose, look, Simon, I mean, first and foremost, like I said, it's been a long time coming, probably because this is an incredibly complex thing to try and sort out, because the variety of people that work for themselves, you know, if nothing else, the wages that people are paid, some will be paid many, many hundreds of thousands and some will not. I mean, this fiendishly complex, but we have something, not until June. What did you make of it?
Well, the difficulty, as you say, with the self-employed is that they don't all look the same. They do lots of different things. You might have a plumber. You might have an electrician. You might have a shopkeeper. You might have a taxi driver, but you also might have a lawyer. You might even have someone who works for a startup that is quite successful, that is effectively self-employed. I have friends, but then you've got people in the creative industries as well. There's lots of freelance journalists. There are photographers as well. I have a friend who's a photographer who can't work. My wife is self-employed. She does management training and development. She's trying to continue doing coaching and stuff over the internet. She's trying to do some training courses over the internet, but a lot of her work is face-to-face and it's been cancelled and she's not got new stuff coming in. She's self-employed as well. So what Rishi Sunak has had to do is try to work out a way to help all of those people. And he's come up with this scheme which gives them a percentage of their profits, effectively the money that they get for a short period of time. It's going to be a grant. It's not a loan. They don't have to pay it back. But he had to work out some way to cap it. There was a big concern that you might get those people at the upper end, the people who were using self-employment as a way to pay less tax, who there's already been a crackdown on, with IR35 rules coming down on people employing and working.
It's been postponed for a year, hasn't it?
Paying themselves in dividends and so on and so on. So he's come up with this solution. And whilst the self-employed and small businesses have broadly welcomed this and said it's great, there are a couple of problems. The main one is that the money's not going to be coming to them until June, and then it's going to be backdated. It's difficult to get this kind of stuff up and running, but there are people who are struggling to pay their bills right now and they don't know what to do. People who have been told that they cannot go out, they cannot go to work, and they don't know how they're going to support their families. And mortgage holidays and all those other things are not necessarily going to help with that. Then there is the issue of the fact that there are lots of people who work through limited companies and aren't dodging tax. There's people who are working through limited companies because the companies that they are suppliers for have told them, we want you to work through a limited company. We will only take you on if you work through a limited company. So I'm hearing from people who are in that position who are saying, look, I pay myself a salary and I pay myself fairly. I pay my taxes and I'm being caught out by this. And then there are the people who are self-employed who are caught out by this £50,000 trading profits cap. And if you are self-employed and simply pay yourself all your money and you don't expense lots of stuff, then that might be pretty close to the income that you're pulling in. And £50,000 is a lot of money, but there's going to be people within that bracket who are plumbers, electricians, who do not necessarily tradespeople. They do lots of other jobs and they might be the sole breadwinner of their family.
Living in London or somewhere very expensive.
Or they might be that their earnings are so critical to their family that their family cannot meet their mortgage payments, cannot meet their bills, cannot do all their other things without that money coming in. And somewhat strangely, although the amount of money that you can get from this has been capped, there's also this extra £50,000 cap. So anyone who goes over that gets no help whatsoever at all.
And there's no taper.
That has been pointed out as being unfair.
There's no taper or anything. It's literally just cliff edge, 50,000, boom, you're out.
Yeah, absolutely. That certainly seems to be the case. I'm sure all this stuff is going to get ironed out, and maybe they're going to have to change it in some way. But that is certainly something that has come back from people saying, look, this is a problem. Also, because it is based on people's profits, if people have been reinvesting all of their money back into the business, and so they haven't had those trading profits, then they're going to have a problem as well. And also, if people have only just become self-employed, they're not going to have the accounts in order to be able to do it.
It's an absolute minefield, isn't it? I want to talk to you about the other aspect of what Rishi Sunak said, the future, but let's not get to the future just yet. Let's talk about what's right in front of people, Lee, because lots of people won't even, as Simon pointed out there, be able to feel that they can make it to the 10 weeks, I believe it is, that you have to wait until you get this payment. We'll be backdated, but people are struggling now. Businesses could fold now if they don't get help. The government has unveiled a number of measures, but because it's been happening so quickly, it's very difficult for people, I guess, to keep up. You've got business loans, you've got grants, universal credit as well. Lots of these measures have been made more generous for people. But then we're hearing, because so many more people are applying for them, it's absolutely impossible to get through. But what, assuming that we can get through and you will have to be patient, I know that sounds awful to say, we have to be patient. These systems are not designed to do this. There is support out there for self-employed people particularly, isn't there, Lee?
Yeah, first of all, I say, Georgie, I mean, it's such a terrible situation that people are going to be finding themselves in. I mean, I stepped out the front door a couple of days ago just for some exercise, and a couple of people opposite are saying that they've lost their jobs, have been laid off. A next door neighbour has a business, and you know, an aviation business, doesn't know where that's going to head next. We've got friends that are cafe owners. They don't know what's going to happen. And that's the thing. It's so much unknown for everyone. You know, what's going to happen from one day? What, you know, we just say from 1 month to the next, but at the moment it's actually not one day to the next, isn't it? We just don't quite know what's going to happen. And actually, I watched a report the other night in which a woman who was self-employed, she was a freelance charity worker, and she was saying that they had some savings and had some savings that were stretched until for about a month. It lasted them a month, but after that it was a kind of unknown. She was in a queue for universal credit. She was saying that the queue system meant that she got a message at something like 1:30 in the morning saying that her place in the queue, she was now at the front.
Yeah.
You know, and she's having to stay up. She's got young children to look after. And, you know, it's just, my heart goes out to all of these people that are finding themselves in these kinds of situations.
And until
we see the aftermath, we don't know how deep and how terrible that this is going to be for people. And it's a frightening prospect. And you know, you think it's as easy as, oh, you know, there's going to be some help in the form of universal credit, for example. But universal credit anyway has had plenty of teething problems since it was launched, so to have an influx of a lot of people trying to claim it at the same time, look, we
half
know
a
what
million
government,
people recently
because,
trying to
we know what government yeah. systems are like at the best of times, but we're talking now about call centers that are on skeleton staff or shut down. And you know, to be in a queue that long is deeply depressing. And if you've got mouths to feed, you've got, you know, or even if you're just by yourself, you know, it's a very worrying situation you're going to find yourselves in. It's definitely one of those scenarios in which you like to think some people have some sort of savings built up, but we know for a fact that a lot of people don't. You know, people don't have savings to fall back on.
Yeah, of course. I got into a row with someone on Twitter saying, oh, well, can't they use their savings? Well, look, like Simon said, you know, the makeup of self-employed people is very, very varied. A lot of people won't, obviously the idea we always say is 3 months. A lot of people won't be able to do that. And also, do we think that this is all going to go back to normal in 3 months?
What, is
you
know, exactly,
what happens is then when you use up your savings? You'll have nothing, and it'll be very difficult to build up another pot again. So it's like, yeah, it's incredibly worrying for people.
It is, and you know, 3 month you know, having 3 months worth of savings for, like, you know, a rainy day fund type thing. I mean, I don't think anyone ever envisioned a rainy day fund being a pandemic fund. You know, that's the thing, people this is a snowball, hasn't it, in a couple of weeks. This is snowballed is absolutely unbelievable, and we're going to see unemployment rates go through the roof. Let's face it, 3 months time, things aren't, of course they're not going to be back to normal, you know. Supply chains, all the things that make the world tick, you know, with companies and businesses, you know, there's a knock-on effect from top to bottom. And we just don't know what the future is going to look like. I think at the moment we're kind of, things have been just moving at a million mile an hour. I think, you know, this week in particular, we've had, you know, the sun's been shining all week. I know that sounds so sick. People are kind of like in a bit of an okay-ish mood at the moment. I'm thinking, you know, we had the NHS clap last night that's lifted spirits for people and all of that kind of thing. But look, when the dust starts to settle a little bit on this, I think that's when we're going to start seeing, you know, a lot of worrying developments and worries about employment and how people are going to survive from day to day. And, you know, the government has stepped in with a range of packages to try and, you know, stem as much of the problems that are going to arise in the future. But simply put, it's impossible to save everyone's jobs. And it's going to be, I imagine, and I don't want to be, you know, I'm always a positive person, but what happens in the next few years is going to be massive.
And longer. But saying all that, just quickly, I'll get Simon's views, but just to say, you know, to try and be a little bit positive, if you do find yourself in this situation, like I said, a lot of the systems are not fit to deal with the influx of people wanting to access them, like universal credits, like employment support allowance, a statutory sick pay rebate, Ocado. However, work is being done, and Ocado is a good example, is that we are seeing quite some positives in the fact that supermarkets are employing more staff. There will be jobs to be had, and if you are struggling, there is help. So do check out what benefits you're entitled to. There's plenty of information on all of this on This Is Money, so do go and check it out. But if you're really struggling, call Citizens Advice, turn to us, Debt Charity. Also take a look at your budget. It's a really good opportunity to look at where you can perhaps cut back on the things that you may not need at the moment. Talk to your friends and family, and try as much as you can to stay positive and continue to build and grow and innovate your business, or however you were working as a self-employed person. Educate yourself during this time of, I guess, reflection for people, and enjoy the sunshine if nothing else.
I think creatively as well, you know, obviously for some jobs, it's extremely difficult to try and earn money online. It's not going to be particularly easy to earn money online as a taxi driver, for example. But there are things
that could be quite fun, though. Just lift your hair up a little bit and there.
Yeah, exactly. Online hairdressing.
Right.
Helping people cut their own hair online.
Oh my word, I need that. I need that right now. I didn't get my hair cut before this all happened. Honestly, it's the most painful thing. I'm not looking good. I'm looking at myself.
It's trending on Insta. I think it's like girlfriends.
What, my hair?
No, girlfriends. I will do soon. I'll take a photo of it. Girlfriends do boyfriends' hairs like really badly. Corona fails hair.
I can't trust my wife to cut my hair. I don't know what. We cut the baby's hair this week and it's gone like a square fringe. And as soon as we did a voice chat yesterday with the mother-in-law, she was like, "What have you done with her hair?" So I had to cut it out of her eyes. So I don't know what I'm going to do. I've said that I might just shave it all off. But I don't know what I'd look like.
But there are some businesses, Simon, that you can be creative. I'm wondering if because of this, people will want to start more businesses. But then we did, as I said earlier, get Rishi Sunak, the Chancellor, say that actually you may have to pay more going forward in national insurance and tax contributions as a self-employed person to bring you more in line with employees. But then the argument has always been with that is you don't get the security, although at this moment in time, nobody feels very secure, and you don't get the benefits like sick pay and holiday pay. So this is a debate that's been going on for some time and will continue to go on for some time.
It is, yes. And if you remember rightly, former Chancellor Philip Hammond tried to equalise the national insurance, and there was a big backlash against it because they put in their manifesto that they wouldn't raise taxes. Obviously, any promise like that is completely out the window at the moment. And he's saying we're probably going to have to equalise this because it's not right. People are paying lower national insurance. I mean, the argument for it is that they don't get lots of the benefits that people in employment get. You don't have the same mandatory pension contributions, sick pay, holiday pay, all those other things. You have to include all of those things into your costs if you are self-employed. And I must admit, if you're one of the people who are excluded from this, because perhaps you are over that £50,000 cap or something, to then be told you have to pay more tax in order to thank you for it, probably be slightly galling. I mean, the one thing I would say is the government has done an amazing job in trying to make sure that we get the best chance of a V-shaped recovery here, so that we get the sudden pause, the economic impact of everybody being told you're not allowed to go out, you're not allowed to do anything, and that we can try and pick back up somewhere close to where we left off and bounce back. And that's one of the reasons why they're trying to keep people in jobs with the support for employees. It's one of the reasons why they're trying to keep self-employed people afloat. It's one of the reasons why they're trying to keep business afloat with the loans and everything like that. There will be teething problems with all of these things. But one thing I would say is Rishi Sunak seems to me to be doing a pretty decent job at the moment. And I think he does seem like the kind of person who will actually be there listening to people who are raising these things as issues and maybe trying to do something about them to make sure that the system works as well as it could. So maybe we can expect things to change. And certainly some of these big packages that we've seen coming out from the government here, from in the US as well, this fiscal plan they've got, the colossal QE, infinity QE, which is just completely insane, has started to stabilize the markets. We were talking last week about quite how far stock markets had fallen. I mean, this week, the FTSE's up something like 16% at the time of recording. But don't expect that to just continue. It could be the start of the rally. It could be a dead cat bounce. We don't know.
Well, you totally anticipated what I was going to ask you next, because Topsy Turvy doesn't even cover what's been going on with the markets at the moment. But we did have some, I guess, good news in the context of where we're at the moment in terms of the FTSE. So is it to last? You know, what advice is there to investors at the moment? You don't think this is a turning corner yet, though?
Just be careful. There'll be more bad news. But it's not over. You know, there's been a bit more positive news this week. Get another week of bad news. When you start to get the companies reporting how this is hitting them, you know, at the moment, a lot of them are saying, we don't know how bad it's going to be. Maybe investors are making a decision now. Maybe it won't be quite as bad as X, or quite as bad as Y. Or what happens when it turns out to be worse than X or Y? You know, don't expect things to just suddenly go straight back up from here. We talked last week about advice for people who think this might be an opportunity to buy while the stock market's on sale. And one of the great pieces of advice we got was drip feed your money in. You got your pot of money, put 25% in now, wait a bit. Then put the other 25% in, wait a bit. And that means that, yes, if suddenly things just do suddenly shoot all the way back up to where they were, you'll have missed out on some of the gains. You will have at least got some of them. But if things fall again, you won't have lumped it all in at one point.
All right. Well, Lee, this on a similar theme, a lot of people, I guess, asking, in the current climate, should you invest your money at all? Should you save it in cash? Of course, we've got ISA season. There's no excitement with ISA season at all at the moment. I mean, usually it was a time when banks and building societies offered, you know, top rates to tempt us to make the most of our 20 grand annual allowance. But have we seen really anything, Lee?
Oh, Georgia, there's always excitement for cash ISA season. Even if it's a coronavirus cash season, cash ISA season, there's always excitement afoot. And this week at home, one of the jobs that I do every week, update our five of the best cash ISAs, and at this time of year I do it every couple of days because things jump and change pretty quickly as people fill up their pots. But before I go into all of that, would you like another piece of savings news?
Go for it.
You said no, it would have been quite disappointing.
Okay.
Marcus Bank have launched another account today. So if you remember back in September 2018, they had an easy access savings rate that they launched at 1.5%. We've been eagerly awaiting another product to come from them, and they've launched a 1-year fixed rate today. Now, before you get too excited, it pays 1.45%, so it pays less than the easy access it launched just 18 months ago, which is an indication of where savings rates have gone in recent times. And actually, just 4 months ago, you could have got a 1-year fixed paying 2%. So it shows you how far down rates are going. We've obviously had a couple of Bank of England base rate cuts, so that's going to start factoring in soon. And it's likely that this Marcus Bank 1.45% is going to be a kind of benchmark of where top 1% deals are. Currently, you can get better deals in our tables, but they're from lots of small challenger banks, and once they fill their, you know, coffers with what they need, they disappear, and it's likely that that's going to happen pretty quickly. So if you're in the market for a short-term fixed rate, you want to ride out, you know, a bit of the storm and whatnot, and you want to get the best rate as possible, I would suggest that a one-year fix at the moment wouldn't be a bad bet, and that some of those best buy deals are going to fall away pretty quickly. But that aside, we've got, just over a week now until the new tax year. So, you know, it's still worth maxing out your allowance if you can, and thinking ahead for next year and what you're going to do. Of course, a lot of people, especially novice investors, I would suggest in the last couple of years have turned their attentions to stocks and shares ISA, and a lot of people might be put off at the moment. We had this conversation a couple of weeks ago, didn't we, where we were too afraid to check our stocks and shares ISAs, which is probably the best thing to do at the moment.
How mine's doing at the moment?
I can't look at it. But, you know, again, banging the same old drum, if you are going to open a product like that, you know, 5-10 year outlook, you can't think
14%. It was down 25% at one stage. It was, I think, was -255 pounds. We're now -205 pounds. I'd like to point out, when Simon said now is the time to get out, it was only down 25 pounds. So
the wise words of the minor investor over there, Mr. Simon Lambert. But look, it's still worth maxing out your ISA limits if you can, or if you can't max it out, having that tax-free saving. The whole point about tax-free accounts not being as attractive as they once were is because of the personal savings allowance. So you can earn interest of up to £1,000 if you're a basic rate taxpayer without an ISA now. You can also earn £500 if you're a higher tax rate payer. But the point is, there could be a point in the future in which you start going over those limits. And I would suggest that ISA is probably a safer product than something like personal savings allowance, in the fact that that could be pulled at some point. I'm not saying it's going to be, but it's more likely to be pulled than ISA products, just for the fact that, you know, ISAs have been pushed on a lot of people in recent years. And there's some figures out that we've got this week, which I think is quite interesting. So 7.7 million savers opened a cash ISA in 2017-18. So that's the most up-to-date stats. And put in an average of just over £5,000. So some way off the maximum allowance. And there's some rates that are actually, at one point, not that long ago, the rates between ISAs and normal accounts were quite big, but actually the gap has narrowed somewhat in the last couple of weeks, especially. So it's still worth looking out for. And also, we've got changes to the junior ISA coming in a new tax year. So you'll be able to save just under £10,000 in a junior ISA. Again, there's not many people out there, I would suggest, that are going to be able to max that out, but it's still a worthwhile proposition checking out, because actually children savings rates on junior ISAs are much more attractive than they are on adult ISAs. So you can get over 3%. Again, how long that lasts, I don't know. But the cash ISA season isn't dead, Georgie. Next week, you will see lots of top quality ISA content coming straight to your door.
Brilliant.
Written from home by George Nixon, our savings reporter, and I, that are going to answer all of your ISA questions. So get excited.
There's a good point in that, though. I do think that in all of this madness, and we have been a bit gloomy and doomy, as you rightly pointed out, Lee, there is lots to be gloomy and doomy about, but it doesn't mean you should throw out all your financial planning, and as much as you can, I guess, stick on course for what you want to achieve.
Exactly. Yeah. Look, I mean, for a lot of people at the moment, you know, thinking about the future and saving and that kind of thing might be just out the window because of personal circumstances.
Of course.
For other people, this could be the perfect opportunity to give yourself a bit of a, you know, bit of financial DIY to do those things that you're always putting off. You know, we have savings inertia in this country, for example, in which billions of pounds of cash is sloshing around in the big banks paying absolutely minimal interest, that unless money starts moving out of those accounts that have been long forgotten about, they're going to continue to offer those kind of low rock bottom rates. So, you know, for some people, this will be an opportunity to have a bit of a think about what they're doing with their money and how to make it work harder for them. But as we've said throughout the show, and again, not to end it on a downbeat tone, you know, a lot of people, who don't have those savings pots that haven't saved, you know, it's very difficult to sort of sit here and say, you know, max out your £20,000cash ISA allowance. And we've got other people that simply that is just pie in the sky, you know. So
just to add to that, that if you're struggling and you don't have rainy day savings, let alone money to stick in a cash ISA or a pension, then people have my utmost sympathy. But there are lots of people who aren't in that position, and there's lots of our listeners who won't be in that position. And I guess one of the things to think about is when times are tough, when markets are falling, when interest rates are being cut, when people are being told to stay at home and not go outside, that actually making sure that the money that you do have saved, however much it is, whether it's a small amount or a large amount, is as tax efficient as possible is even more important than doing it when times are good. So the market's down about 25% on the peak, roughly at the moment, maybe a little bit more, 25 to 30%. If you've paid money into a pension, you will have got basic rate tax relief at the minimum. That will have uprated your contributions by 25%. So if you put £80 into the stock market in the middle of January, you will have got 25% uplift on that to take it back to where you would have been before basic rate tax. So £100 would have gone in. Now your £100 investment might have fallen by 25%, but that only takes you back down to 75. You're only just below the 80 that you put in. So you haven't lost anywhere near as much as it looks like on paper. If you've got money in an ISA, if you've got savings in there, any of the interest on that will be tax-free. If you didn't have it in an ISA and it was over the savings allowance, then you'd be paying tax on it. That tax on that savings is going to be 20%. Well, if you've got it in an ISA, it's not 20%. Likewise, for an investment ISA, you don't have to pay any capital gains tax when you sell. You don't have to pay any tax on dividends. If it's not in an ISA, you could be paying nearly 20% in capital gains tax. You could be paying 20%. You could be paying 40%. In income tax on your dividends. And so having it in an ISA protects it from that tax. And if you don't cash in your investments right now, you don't crystallize your losses, and the stock market's down a lot, the stock market will go back up again. And if you don't need the money right now, don't take the money out. When it goes back up again, you'll be in a better position, but you'll still have the tax benefits there to take advantage of.
Very good. We draw to a close now, but if you do have any comments or questions for the team or anything that you would like them to look into, Simon?
Email us at editor@thisismoney.co.uk. We're quite interested in hearing from people who are being hit by the property market chaos that we were talking about earlier. Are you meant to complete? Were you due to exchange? Everything like that. If you've got problems or if you've got questions that we can help you with, email us at editor@thisismoney.co.uk, or you can tweet us at thisismoney, or you can come to thisismoney.co.uk/podcast to join in the debate in the reader comments.
Yes, indeed. And you can keep up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk, or you can download the app. And if you do like our podcast, why not rate us on iTunes? It helps people find us.
This Is Money's podcast is brought to you in partnership with the Financial Services Compensation Scheme. Check your financial products at FSCS Protected at fscs.org.uk/thisismoney.